At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's review of the offense, the happy task this week after the 41-31 win over the Bucs on Monday Night Football. Here to do that with me is Frazier Tafar, my co-host from the Matchup Show. Frazier, how you doing?
Doing good, Glenn. Glad to be back on for offensive show. Going over great performances the Ravens have had, which has been a common theme the past couple of weeks so far.
A nice, a kind of a hyped performance, maybe a little bit understated, but also on prime time, a Bucs team that had just put a 50-burger up on the Saints. Mayfield and Jackson, a renewal of that AFC North rivalry from a few years ago. And Mayfield having a good year of his own, leading the NFL in touchdown passes coming into this game. But Jackson, another amazing prime time performance, huh?
Yeah, another Jackson 5 fifth of his career. And it's just impressive when he has these performances. You almost just look up and, oh, he has 5 touchdown passes. You just don't notice it the way he's performing. So it's great to see this offense humming and interested to see how we continue this trend.
I think I really hate night games. I've made that clear on this show a number of times. It's because it disrupts the analysis schedule and whatnot. So I don't have a good reason for it. I just don't like them for my own personal reasons. But the Ravens certainly like primetime games. And Lamar Jackson is 20 touchdowns, no interceptions, as I think most people know, on Monday Night Football, which is amazing. And John Harbaugh has the amazing home record, also outstanding overall record in terms of Monday Night games. Remember, you probably all but the very best teams are going to lose more Monday Night games than they win because the slate of matchups tends to be quite difficult. And even the best teams are going to play way underneath their normal record because they're playing a harder slate of opponents than they normally play. These games are handpicked. And this is another one. It's a very good win for the Ravens against a solid opponent. And the last really top quarterback they'll face for a little while. They will face Burrow and then at the stretch of the next 5 games or so. But otherwise, it's a pretty lean set.
Yeah, back to your point about the Monday night and the prime time games. It could be that the Ravens coaching staff and players really do take advantage of the extra time they get throughout the nights and the extra day for Monday. So I think that is definitely an advantage. And kudos to the coaching staff being able to capitalize on that year in and year out.
Yeah, I think you're basically right on the money there. My theory is that you kind of have to keep players occupied in a way so that they peak at the right time during the day. And I think Harbaugh and the Ravens coaching staff, by means of long cultural learning back to the beginning of the franchise, has really kind of understood this and learned from it. And they just know how to get a team ready to peak at 9 p.m. at night or 8 p.m. at night or whenever the game's going to be played. They've been perfectly good at playing games in foreign countries. Actually, that's probably not true. They were like, what, 2-1 over there, 1-1 over there. But they did come home very effectively. After winning in London last time against Tennessee, they also came home and won their game without a bye week, which we thought was excellent time management. But certainly the Ravens have a record. The more home night games, the better, I think, in terms of record. You agree with that?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. But, this one was a road one and a little bit of a different game script for them. They recovered from a very poor start. Instead of boat racing the Tampa Bay right off the bat, they let Tampa Bay get a little bit of a 10-point lead. And honestly, did not look very good because Tampa's had 2 good drives. They've kept our team on the field a long time. During those first 2 drives, the Ravens had a 3-and-out with 2 sacks. It wasn't a 3-and-out. It was like a five and out or six and out or whatever it was, but involved two sacks to end that drive. That obviously was very discouraging. And then they very quickly roll up 34 consecutive points.
Yeah, I think all Ravens fans were probably anxious up until Mike Evans left the game. I think once Mike got out and the Ravens were able to key in on Godwin, they got those six stops and the six straight possession touchdowns or six straight scoring possessions for the Ravens. I mean, it's going to be hard to beat if they keep that recipe going. So it was focusing on the offense. It was good to see us struggle in the beginning and then immediately have an answer the next couple of drives. That's great to see.
Yeah, they did. And I think the play of the game to me was Marlon Humphrey's interception. I thought really turned the game around in terms of being the play that really did. And we're not here to talk about that because of the offense, but it was a great turnaround from that. Thought in terms of how the offense ran, though, great game for taking advantage of what they were given. And I think absolutely one of the biggest takeaways for me from this game was how much the Bucs sold out to stop the run in this game. We thought the Commanders did it a lot last week. Commanders, they had everybody at the line of scrimmage and blah, blah. They showed pass rush looks, but they still had some defensive backs on the field. The Bucs didn't even do that. They rushed with numbers, but they also had 4.15. Think about that for a second. Defensive backs per play. That's basically playing base every single down. Okay. Now they didn't quite do that. You know, they probably had about 10 plays where they didn't, and they might have been even a few more because they might have had some heavier groups in there with only three defensive backs for those last three plays. I didn't check it specifically to see if that was true. I went from the snap totals in the game book to calculate this 4.15. They had two inside linebackers on every play, every single play. So that meant they had effectively five guys, edge and IDL, playing every snap. So they had three down linemen and two outside linebackers on those plays. And if you total up the numbers for the players, that's exactly what you see. Is you see 4.84 actually, edges and interior defensive linemen were there. I've never seen anything like it. Is the only way I can put it. To find anything similar, I think you have to go back to about 2005 for the Ravens when they played 265 snaps with three defensive backs. But I mean, the Ravens certainly have never had a year even then where they played something close to four DBs. And I can't imagine it happening elsewhere in the NFL. I think it is strictly a Jackson / Henry phenomenon.
Yep. And it was working in the sense of stopping the run game early in the game, first, second quarter. But then once the third quarter and fourth quarter started to run around, that's when Henry broke off on those couple runs. Blocking up front was great and was able to penetrate that defense. But really, the Ravens utilized those heavy sets by just really tossing the ball around the field. Mark Andrews having a good day, Bateman having a great day. So these things are impressive because under Roman, when people would stack the box and force us to throw, we would have issues with that. But now it seems under Monken, we're able to have counters for whatever the defense throws at us.
So here's the funny thing. The Ravens always play pretty heavy. So don't get me wrong on the Ravens were super light or anything, but they used only 1.85 heavies per play in this game. And that's actually down by almost 0.2 of a heavy per play from the Washington game. So they were 2.03 in the Washington game. So that means kind of their average formation is something lighter than 21 or 12 personnel. Okay, because 21 or 12, either one, yep, uses two heavies. Okay, and they only used 1.85 heavies per play. So they had a fair amount of 11 out there. All right, and I'm not doing anything funny with the positions. I'm taking roster positions to do this. All the play, the people who count as heavies are the three people, are the four people that you think of as tight ends or fullbacks, plus any sixth offensive lineman, which there were none in this game. Mm-hmm. All right, so the point is that despite the fact that the Ravens played lighter, which is one of the gigantic inputs into what defensive players you see on the field, because the opposing defensive coordinator gets to respond to what personnel you put on as an offense, they still played it a lot heavier than the Commanders did. Wow. And the Commanders really went all out. So, you know, the Commanders knew the heavy was coming, and they still went a little bit lighter than this Tampa Bay team did, who you know, for whatever reason, decided, hey, we're going all out. I think the Ravens probably see more of this down the line. I mean, even there's just when Henry and Lamar are clicking the way they are, you know, you might have a chance if you let the other team pass. Cordell made this point originally, but you don't have any chance if you just let them run all over you to start.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you let them run all over you, that just sets up the play-action game. And at that point, Lamar's unstoppable if you get him to that point.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about Derrick Henry, because he's obviously a very significant part of that, both in terms of who the Ravens have to take the workload, but also in terms of the mesh point and what kind of how Lamar and he manipulate defenses in the way they have. Do you have any concerns about overuse at this point?
Not really. Only because I feel like a majority of his yardage has come on these big runs, and he's not, I don't think the wear and tear is really there. Like Monday, the majority of carries came in the second half, and like I mentioned, they were big gains. So I don't really see him taking too much punishment this year so far. I mean, can you agree on that?
I don't know if I would agree on the punishment part, because I don't like to project my feeling on how a player is going down and whether or not, you know, continually getting banged in the shin and the knee is accumulating any real damage. But he's had 20.4 touches per game. And I would have hoped that number was going to be about 15.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly be very effective at 15, but he's not going to run for 2,000 yards at 15.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Even at if he's had 19 carries per game, if you can figure out pretty quickly. Okay, so let's say he keeps up the current pace and his 19 carries per game, he's healthy for every game, so he's 323 carries. If I take 2,000 yards and divide by 323, he'd have to average 6.2 yards per carry. As you know, even though he's got 6.5 right now, no way that'll hold up.
Yeah, unsustainable at all.
Yeah, so he's not going to get to 2,000 yards at this. Nor do I think the Ravens should push him to 2,000 yards. I think, you know, it would be a win if from this point he ended up with 1,650, 1,600, reasonable.
Maybe that's definitely reasonable, especially if Keaton Mitchell comes back that healthy. I mean, if he's able to bring that speed aspect to this backfield, I really do think it takes us to a new level, but the only issue I might see is where does that leave Justice Hill in the rotation?
Right. And I'm less concerned about Hill not being in there, because I think Hill is in there pretty naturally for his pass blocking. And even though he allowed half a sack in this game, to me, he's been indispensable in terms of that, in terms of how hard he's fought. In times in some very unfavorable circumstances. But you just mentioned the really big news that came out today was Keaton Mitchell returned to practice. That opens up a 3-week window. So he might not play any of the next three games, but by the fourth game, he'll have to be activated during the week before to the 53-man roster, as Mollett was, a couple days ago, yesterday, I think.
Right.
So Keaton Mitchell will be activated basically 3 weeks from today to the 53-man roster. And then he'll play that following Sunday, which is the fourth game from now, which is who the Ravens playing that week. Let's take a quick look. If I look at the Ravens schedule here. Yeah, so they play Cleveland, Denver, Cincinnati. He's going to play against the Pittsburgh Steelers on November 17th on the road, which would be a huge asset potentially from there. Now, it could be he's not really ready to go, and they activate him to the 53 because they have to. And then they have to just play with him as walking wounded for a while on their inactive list.
Could they put him on IR, short-term IR?
I don't know what the rules are for that as far as when he can return. But coming off PUP, I don't know what the rules are. I really don't. Okay. Yeah, so rather than guess, I'll leave it at that. All right, talked about Keaton, the Derrick Henry, and do you have an over-under for Derrick Henry, by the way, on carries for the season? And maybe give me an over-under while you're at it for Keaton Mitchell coming out of this.
What's his total right now?
134. So we'll go with that's That's carries, not touches, but let's just do carries. It's easier. All right, 10 more games. Okay, I got mine.
280.
You're saying 280 is your over under?
Yep.
50% chance he's over 280 or under 280. I think I take the over on that. I'm at 309.
Okay.
I'll put it. So I think he gets about 175 more carries the rest of the way. He will lose a few carries to Mitchell. And by the way, I think your number might be better because I'm kind of projecting to be healthy the entire time, and that's probably a mistake.
Right.
So the more likely
this run heavy focus on offense as well.
Yeah, they that could happen. But I think, you know, another possibility is that week 18 won't matter to them and he'll be sitting if that's the case. So, just probably a few things to consider with relation to that. I actually, reflecting upon it, I think I like your 280 number better.
For Keaton, I think maybe 50 carries.
50 carries. So last year he started right around this time. Ended up getting 47 carries, but he did get hurt. So for him to come back, let's say he comes back against Pittsburgh. He'd have to average about 7 carries per game to get 49 for the year, for the regular season. I think I'm under on that.
Okay.
I think I'm at 35.
Because I feel like they're going to ease him in. I think the first couple of games, he might get 3-4 touches. And then probably the sixth game, he gets in. Because how many games will be left?
There'll be 7 games left when he comes back.
Yep. How much?
7 games.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So 7 carries a game seems a little high to me. And if you're thinking, I think he's going to start with 2 or 3, and then he might end up with 10 or 11 – I think 10 or 11
a little too much then.
Yeah, 10 or 11 with Derrick Henry around is probably ain't happening.
Yeah, no way.
But okay. But it will be fun because I think they'll use him more as a pass threat and as a run threat. But yes. I think
game.
Yeah, a lot of screen game. Some jet sweeps will get some of that. They may get some jet tosses for passing yards too. There'll just be a lot of things. I think the big benefit to the offense is going to be being able to take Henry out of the game when you have an obvious running down still and not feel bad about it.
Maybe you utilize him in motion more rather than Zay Flowers.
Exactly. So you're using him as the primary gadget weapon, and then Flowers is used more as a intermediate passing game threat where he's been deadly.
Yes, 100%.
Okay. All right. Love it. Love it. All right. Let's just mail our idea in and get credit for it. Right?
I want to talk about one thing in the AFC. What's your opinion on this DeAndre Hopkins trade to the Chiefs?
You know, I don't think it's a huge needle moving trade. I'll start by saying that. And I don't think he's a player who would easily have fit into what the Ravens are doing. In fact, if you're going to sit Bateman to play Hopkins, I'm passing on the deal right now. Bateman and Lamar seem to have it together now.
Yes.
And I don't want to mess with that at all. We'll talk about how well Bateman's playing a little later, but he's off the charts right now in terms of what's going on. I don't want to sit Flowers. Could he replace Aguilar? Well, yes, sure. But if he did, I mean, then are you getting enough gain for the draft pick to make that worth it?
Right.
And then you're trading, a fourth or a fifth for the lower utilization and the difference between him and Aguilar. And Aguilar hasn't been bad either. Aguilar's been good. So, I don't see the value in him right now. And I'm not happy the Chiefs got him because I think the Chiefs can make better use of him, but I wouldn't want the Ravens to have made the same commitment to him.
I think it was very disappointing waking up this morning at 6 a.m. and you see that they signed the top receiver in the league. And it's like, dang, can these guys... The NFL needs to just have a collusion against Kansas City and just make sure they don't get any good players through trade. But
supposedly, the Yankees of the 1950s, there was a general buzz around the major leagues, really more in the AL than anywhere else, to say we're going to break up the Yankees and we're not going to make trades with them. And what ended up happening is they made like every trade in the late 50s with Kansas City. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Kansas City A's became almost a de facto farm team for the Yankees at the major league level. And just the whole situation stunk like you wouldn't believe, but there were all these exchanges of players that went on between these two teams. A bunch of guys you wouldn't have heard of, but Curve and Suitcase Simpson and all these guys who got traded back and forth. It really was an ugly situation, but it goes to show you those kind of agreements, they just can't hold up for very long. Any kind of cartel or embargo of trading with a particular team.
Sure.
All right. So it's not like Hopkins is having a bad year. He's at 8.2 yards per target with Tennessee, and that's with Will Levis there. So he's remarkably had a pretty decent catch rate and a very good success rate of 66 and two-thirds percent. But, he's only been targeted 21 times. So it's not like he's been highly utilized so far.
His quarterback's Will Levis.
Yes. So I'm the Tennessee, they weren't utilizing him properly. So them trading him and getting some draft capital for him makes sense. If you're looking at how valuable will he be to the Chiefs, more valuable than he was to Tennessee and less valuable than he would be to Baltimore.
100%. Very true.
All right, let's roll on to some scheme things. One thing I generally take the look at the special teams when we're on the offense show, but 8 out of 8 kickoffs again from the Ravens went into the end zone. It was only 3 out of 6 from the Bucs, so the Ravens did have to have some use of special teams personnel in terms of returns versus the Bucs, but it still looks like the Ravens are carrying extra special teams players. They did so again instead of a fifth defensive lineman in this game, which actually hurt the team in this game. They had not only did they have an injury that was there in the fourth quarter where Travis Jones only played 2 snaps.
Yep.
And now he's on the injury report. But they also had just a complete wear down on the defensive line in terms of quality of pressure. They were having 0 pressure events in the fourth quarter, with the exception of the sack on the 2-point try by Pierce, which was big. But, that was the only contribution.
Yep. I think the roster gymnastics this year has been a little bit disappointing, especially in that fifth defensive lineman department. For a team that had a successful rotation last year, I don't know why you changed the formula when we led the team in sacks. I mean, led the league in sacks last year. And we're continuing to see that trend in the beginning of the year. And we just decided to, I don't know. I just don't know what it will take for us to continue to carry 5 linemen. We're not making a huge impact in the special teams game anyway. Like, it's proven to not be an impact. I don't know what they're seeing, because who do you think that fifth defensive lineman spot is being taken by?
I mean, it's one of the marginal special teams players. It might have been Ross. It might have been, Collier this week, who was also the third running back. I mean, they've had marginal special teams players. Walker is another good one, and he's certainly playing special teams and not playing offense. So that's a problem. I don't know if I'm bothered not having a third running back, because I think there's real risk every time your running back has a carry, every time your running back, has a play, that you're going to lose him. So I'd like to have a third running back, and I understand why they would do that. I don't think it's as important to have a fifth wide receiver active. And if you're doing it just for, basically special teams play, and that's 11 snaps there, you could do better. And a defensive lineman is more value for the individual game and more insurance. And boy, it would have been nice in this game.
Yes, 100%. I think I'm hoping they see the data or something and they realize that we cannot continue and sustain this.
All right. I think this was a game, at least to me, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, where the Ravens really, more than anything, beat themselves offensively when they lost it all, which wasn't too often. And that's really after that first drive. So Tampa got those 2 sacks on the initial drive. And then after that, it's all Ravens mistakes that ended drives. They had, the next drive they got stopped was on 2 offensive holdings plus an OPI that cost them a first and goal from the 8. and didn't score. Then they had the Linderbaum IDP followed up by the Linderbaum bad snap, which cost them a ton of yards. Then they had the Lamar backwards pass turnover. They had three runs into the middle by Hill. They lost another drive to that perfect onside kick. And I don't think there's anything Flowers could have done about it. I'm not sure that – had this discussion already on the defensive show, but I'm not sure who could have done anything about that particular onside kick.
Yeah, I don't know. There's any that kick was just too perfect. I mean, no big body receiver. No, I don't know if Andrews or Likely might have grabbed it, but yeah. Definitely not a guy like Zay Flowers. I think he had no chance to go up and grab that against someone bearing down on him full speed, and it's just a tough catch.
Yeah, and it really sucks that both of the kicks, onside kicks, had been recovered this year, have been kicked to Zay Flowers. But the first one kind of was his fault. It wasn't an easy play to make on the ball. The ball had tons of English on it by Aubrey in Dallas. And then the second one, he really didn't have a chance to go up and get the ball. He was like Muggsy Bogues trying to rebound against, whatever 7-footer you want to choose.
I think the first one was mainly like the first one was tough because the Ravens practice that kind of recovery, like the videos they have of the rookies being hosed down and the fumble recovery. That's something they practice. So for him not to come up with that is disappointing. But like you mentioned, the kick was good by Aubrey. So you can't blame him on that.
So but
back to your point about the Ravens beating themselves, I think it's Belichick mentioned it in the Manning cast. The only person that beat the Ravens is the Ravens. And it's been evident in the first two losses of the year. Kansas City didn't beat us. We beat ourselves. And the same thing get the Raiders. I don't see any other defense that can match up against us other than Pittsburgh right now. And that's the marquee benchmark for us right now this season.
Certainly got to win those games. Those are big in terms of securing the North, which is the first order of business. Well, the first order of business is to win every week. And I could sit here and play the same game that Harbaugh is and say we got to be 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, not, 10-0 the rest of the way.
Right.
We don't want to think like that. But if you're prioritizing the importance of the games, you'd still say, that the two games against Pittsburgh are absolutely the most important two on the schedule because that's the divisional thing. And then right after that is the game against Houston, because that could decide very easily the two seed in the AFC. So those three games and that Houston game, the timing of that Houston game in particular looks really bad for the Ravens. It'll be on a short week on the road on that weird Wednesday Christmas game. They'll play the previous Saturday against Pittsburgh, but which is also not good because you have to figure that'll be a physical game.
Yep.
And then the Ravens will have to get ready to go again. So tough run there for the Ravens. Not they have other scheduling advantages this year, but that is a pretty big disadvantage. A couple things about Henry in here. Henry, I thought the usage of him was pretty good. 4 carries for 23 yards in the first half and then 11 for 146 in the second half.
Yeah.
so a nice use of Henry against a tired defense. They've been chasing Lamar around, trying to catch him and not being very effective at it, despite the two sacks in that first half. And then they got a heavy dose of Henry in that second half and were not ready to handle it.
Yeah, I think this seems to be the game plan for us. It's if Henry doesn't get established early, and give it a couple more tries and then just unleash Lamar in the pass game. And then later, once we get a little lead, that's when we continue to force feed Henry and he'll just break a couple just because the defense is so fatigued. I think the Bills game was an example of what it looks like when Henry gets going early. Same thing with the Cowboys game as well. Yep. I like the fact that if plan A gets stuffed, we're able to go to plan B and then just go right back to plan A once everything else gets settled down. So this offense, it's the confidence that we have in it right now. It's almost too good. It's too scary right now because we're so used to Ravens defense is the heart and soul of this franchise. And now it seems like the tide's turning a little bit with Lamar Jackson coming to his own as honestly one of the best quarterback in the National Football League right now.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to watch. I there's two things I'd say about what you're talking about with Henry being used early in games. The one thing they're doing is being willing to pivot quickly. And we've seen them in playoff games be too slow to pivot, either away from the run or to stay with the run, either way, or to go to more runs. I think everybody in the AFC Championship hates the fact that the running backs didn't get a lot of runs. I think if we look back to the 2006 playoff loss to the Colts, they weren't getting anywhere with Jamal and really needed to get off the run. And the 2003 loss to the Titans at home, they weren't getting anywhere with Jamal after the 2000 season and didn't get off the run quickly enough. But I think, you know, pivoting quickly is good. One thing that allows you to determine what's working is the scripted plays allow you to probe at what the defense is doing and still throw them a bunch of curveballs that they may not be able to handle with whatever they've got planned. But you get a chance to see, are they going to run blitz against us? You know, they're small. We both know they're small. Does that mean they're going to run blitz on us and try some things? And I think they're one of Monken's big successes this season has been the scripted plays and how effective they've been.
Yep, and he's continued to. I mean, we've scored on every drive this year. Yeah,
Every first drive they haven't scored a touchdown on every one, but I think you're right. I think they've scored a lot of points on the first drive. This game they didn't score.
Right.
So I'm not sure how many. It's a lot of points per drive still on the opening drive.
Fair. But the one big FU moment that Monken had against the Bucks was when they ran that the sweep motion to right, the swing pass. I'm pretty sure they ran that play like three times in one drive. And then the third time they ran it was like on that 3rd and 23 and Justice Hill got him to field goal range. That was like, I mean, when it's working, it's working. And I don't know, that just goes to show you that Monken's prepared and he's not scared to double down on what he studied and what he knows will work against some of these defenses he's going against. So to see that and like for it to work was just the big boss move by him.
It hasn't always been Hill, but it's been an awful lot of Hill getting them out of way behind the chains down in distance situations, some second and long and some third and long. In this game, they had one of the 49-yard pass to Bateman was on second and a lot, right? Second and 17, second and 18, something like that.
The one deep in the middle, over the middle. Oh, yeah, the touchdown.
The 49-yard touchdown, yeah.
Yeah, that was second 17, yep.
Second 17. So you know, they've had a variety of ways they've been able to overcome that. But Justice Hill definitely has been the key player in the heart of all this. Great to see him playing at this level right after they re-signed him. We know the Ravens do not have good success in the period immediately after signings with certain players. So you go Flacco, certainly in that 2013 season, Stanley, the injury 2 days after he signed his big deal. Dennis Pitta got injured very shortly after signing his deal. So it's nice to see Justice Hill playing so well. Yards before contact. Let's talk about Henry there as well. By the way, there's a lot of difference in yards before contact by different sites. So if you go to PFF, you're going to see his yards before contact is about 3.15, which is incredible. And his yards after contact is about 3.37. If you go to PFR, Pro Football Reference, his yards before contact are 4.24. So they have some measure of contact that they require a little more than what PFF does. So maybe if you got a finger on him, it's not contact.
Yeah, more than a hand or something.
Yeah, you got to get a hand or you got to get an arm on him or something. You got to get a wrist on him. Maybe I'm not sure exactly what the rule would be and how it would differ, but that's obviously a pretty significant difference that has to have a methodology basis underneath that. But any way you look at it, he's having a great YBC year and he's having a great Yakko year. So it doesn't really matter how you judge it. Both numbers are good.
Yeah, Henry's exceeded my expectation only because I was pessimistic of the offensive line. I had no doubts about who Derrick Henry was as a player. He's proven that to us firsthand experience. So to have them on our side and be matched up with the second best runner in the National Football League. I think this is the marriage made in heaven. I think the one thing that has surprised me about Henry is his long speed. We haven't had that kind of breakaway speed minus Keaton Mitchell since Ray Rice. And it's been great to see it. I know back in the 2008 to 2014, it was almost mandatory. If we get Ray Rice 20 to 25 touches, we essentially win the game most of the time. And it's starting to get to that point with Henry. You give him enough touches, he's going
to
break.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
One or two, and then just demoralize the defense and give Lamar Jackson just that much more opportunity in pass sets.
Right. I mean, you said it all there. I'll say it in the fewest words I can, is that the Lamar Henry mesh point is the most powerful weapon in the NFL right now. There's no quarterback receiver combination that even comes close in terms of its impact on the football game. It's those two at the mesh point that are the deadly, deadly weapon together. What I want to talk about also, I think good game for the receivers. They got some good separation in this game versus man coverage. Bad drop by Ricard cost him a fair chunk of yards. Also cost Lamar a perfect passer rating for the game.
Yeah, that was pretty annoying because Ricard's pretty sure-handed guy. I don't know what was up with that.
Yeah, reasonably so, certainly. But that was a big one. It's one of Ricard's few mistakes in the season, and we can take it in a game like this. But I think they scored anyway on the drive, so it's not like Ricard stalled the drive with that play.
That perfect passer rating would have, I don't know, it would have been so satisfying because five for Jackson, five, and a perfect passer rating for, like, what, third, fourth time in his career?
Yeah, I don't know. He's had a couple at least, so this might have been the third. It might have been the fourth. So, yeah, very impressive day. Three for eight on third down in this game. Not good. They're still at 50% for the year, but what is good is that they only got the third down eight times in a game like this. Get 22 first downs, and they only got the third down eight times. Now, Tampa Bay did get 28 first downs, so they were getting their their yardage in more useful chunks in some perspective, because both teams were similar in terms of total yards, but Tampa Bay turned it into more first downs. If you think first downs are more important, points are obviously the ultimate goal. I said, but Tampa Bay also took the lead in third down conversion percentage now over the Ravens. The Ravens dropped a second. That's the week after the Ravens took over first place from the Commanders, who dropped the third. So, the Ravens are still at 50% and Tampa Bay is at 50.6% after this game.
Which is good, because I mean, if you're going to get to third down and you're going to get it 50% of the time, I think I'll take that ratio more than
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And then I wonder what that statistic is when it's third and seven and less. What is that percentage? Because the Ravens have been in a couple third and longs and have converted. So I would love to see that metric too.
Yeah, it'd be good to look it down. They're very good in drive success rate, which is the percentage of times you turn any series of downs into either a first down or touchdown. They're in the high 70s. That's rarefied air, folks.
Insane, yeah.
Yeah, the only team that's really been better than that in Ravens history is the 2019 team. That was their hallmark, is about 80% of the time they would convert a series of downs into a first down. A lot of that was due to the fact that they went for it on fourth down a lot and were always in seemingly manageable situations and frequently on the plus side of the field.
Yep.
All right. What else do we have to talk about? They had the red zone streak, really great red zone streak, slowed down by that BS Fa'alele holding call. It was really bad. It was a great block, by the way. It wasn't a, he didn't completely square up on him, but you know, I'll just say, if you're scoring every block like I am, I'll just say one of the things you really look for is how much impact did it have on the other player. And the truth of the matter is, took him completely out of the play. There was no recovering from the contact he made with Fa'alele. It didn't matter that it wasn't direct. It wasn't completely square. It was effective.
Yep. And even though it was a bad call, I do kind of see where the refs were going with it, because Fa'alele did pull him a little bit on the outside shoulder pad towards him. So maybe that's something that they did see, but it was disappointing to get that Lamar Jackson highlight touchdown off the board again. So
it really was. And I think, you know, the official was the paid official for the network, whoever it was. I forget who it was on Monday night. It's not Mike Pereira, is it? It's somebody else.
I was at the game, so I don't remember. I don't really know. Oh,
lucky you, man. I forgot that you were going to that. Well, congratulations. That's a big win to see.
Yeah, for sure. It was great. I mean, the only part was I was not a handicapper until it was like 0-0. I just wanted to make sure that Bucks didn't come all the way back, because I was at the Dallas game too, and I was sweating bullets. Sweating bullets at that time.
All right. So they were very good in the red zone. They're still at 5.93 points per red zone drive. That's almost a touchdown with a missed extra point for every red zone drive. That's pretty freaking incredible. And 75.86% red zone conversion rate is the highest in the National Football League. So that's good too. Points per drive, they're now up to 2.95. Now, why does anybody care about points per drive? Well, first of all, it's the most important offensive single statistic for an offense. So let's start with that, because your opponent drives are highly correlated to your own drives, which should be no surprise. If you play slow or the opponents play slow versus you, or whatever combination of plays involved, they're typically going to have within one drive of you in the typical game. This is a game where, so the 2.95 is still 0.13 points less per drive than the 2019 team.
Which is hard to believe, because this offense is humming.
It's hard to believe. It really is hard to believe. But if you were there for the 2019 offense, and I'm sure most of you were, they had series stretches during the middle of the year where not only did they not get stopped in the red zone, they didn't get stopped anywhere on the field. They you know, but if you look, the Cincinnati game and that LA Rams game on Monday night, I think were back to back, and they had a humongous stretch that included those two games. Particularly when Lamar was in the game, because I believe he got pulled in both of those games. They were big blowouts, where they scored pretty much every time he led them down the field. And
I'm pretty sure there was a stretch where Sam Cook didn't have a punt for like a game in two quarters or something. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, he had a chance to set the record for the fewest punts ever that year, and he didn't quite get it done. But the offense didn't quite get it done for him. But the fact that they went for it a lot on fourth down that year meant that they extended drives a good amount because they made a high percentage of the fourth downs. But even when they didn't, they turned it over on downs usually on the plus side of the field, which is, you know, it's not what you want, but it's not as the horrible outcome it can be. Okay. So anyway, probably, you know, it's still going to take an awful lot for the 2024 team to catch that 2019 team from behind. And even though they're going to play some weaker opponents the rest of the way, they do have a couple good defenses they're playing, Pittsburgh most notably.
Yep.
I don't really think they're going to be able to catch them from behind. They'd have to average a little over 3.17 the rest of the way to get there. And I don't see, with the combination of colder weather and some tough defenses, that they're going to be able to maintain that kind of level.
Yeah, and really, I'm not too worried about catching that 19 team because that 19 team didn't finish the job. So let's make sure we can finish the job with this 24 team and this offense. We cannot put this historic run to waste. It's something that we will cherish for the rest of our lives if this team is able to get it done in the postseason.
Yeah, no question about it, and it's. I mean, I do happen to think that this is the sort of team that might roll up more points per drive because they need to. So there'll be more of games where they need to, you know, boat race other teams to win. But but yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I mean, obviously, all that matters is winning in the postseason in the end. All right, let's go talk some about Lamar here. We talked about the Bucs really selling out against the run. The other thing they did is blitz Lamar a lot. They showed a lot of pressure at the line of scrimmage. This is something I want to talk to you about, is they looked like they had a different way of showing sim pressure where they were a couple of yards off the line of scrimmage with their inside linebacker. So it was kind of a compromise between an inside linebacker being the normal depth, which might be about 4 to 5 yards off the line of scrimmage, maybe 4, but not at the line of scrimmage, like jammed A gap, like we were seeing Roquan do, and have trouble getting out of into coverage responsibilities. They were in between at about 2 yards, we'll call it. As I had actually, you know, as I'm going through this, I'm having to decide if these are simulated pressures or not. And I'm being kind of annoyed by their actual positioning because it's making it difficult to make that judgment. But the truth of the matter is, you know, they were attempting to maintain their ability in coverage. And it really makes a lot of sense maybe for the Ravens to consider that going forward, because they've had a lot of trouble pulling Roquan out from under center and getting him to the right spot on the field.
And really, that's kind of the traditional look that the Ravens have had under Rex Ryan and some of those old Ravens defenses. You see Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, those guys creeping around a line of scrimmage, not lining up in the A gaps. I think that's something that and the coaching staff needs to maybe adjust, like you're mentioning, because Roquan did get beat on that flat when he was in that A gap, which is just, first of all, why are we calling man coverage in that kind of situation with our guy in the A gap? Like, first of all, schematically, that's stupid. Second of all, having that advantage, that little, I guess, gap between where your normal stance is and the line of scrimmage, it gives you that little buffer time to get through traffic and the wash. And then also, if you're going, it gives you a running start. You're not starting from zero as well.
Yeah, but I first of all, I agree with all that, and I'd add one other thing that the with regard to the wash, being 2 yards off the line of scrimmage is going to give you more useful pathways to avoid that crossing receiver and cover guy coming from the slot. So that was the problem. That's the play design. They're trying to get, you know, they know Roquan, they know from their pre-snap motion that Roquan is going to be trying to cover that running back in the flat, and they know just how to prevent him from doing so. And unfortunately, they were effective at it on that play, and it's something that there still would have been a completion on that play no matter what, because it would have taken Roquan time to get out there. But it might, instead of a 13-yard gain, maybe it's a 5 or 6 yard gain instead.
Yep, makes sense.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Lamar's actual play. I'll talk a little bit about the pass rush first by the Bucs. This is kind of interestingly done because nothing really worked for them. They had one three-man pass rush, which was incomplete. They had one six-man pass rush that was incomplete. Everything else was a 4 or 5. And Todd Bowles did a very good job of disguising exactly who was coming. If you watch the broadcast, they had all these diagrammatics of it. But the simple matter was the Ravens didn't have a very good idea of who was coming play after play. It just didn't matter. Lamar decoded some of it. He got out of pressure. In the case, he stayed behind the line of scrimmage, but he got out of pressure and made a pass. He was effective under pressure, however you want to call it. But they had a four-man rush. They had 7 plays of a four-man rush. Lamar threw it for 107 yards on those plays, 15.3 yards per play, despite 1 sack. On the five-man rush, 15 plays, 157 yards. That's 10.5 yards per play. Again, 1 sack. So even with that sack, that's the net yard total I'm giving you there with those things. So he was absurdly successful regardless of what sort of pressure was thrown at him. And that really shows up in the ample time and space, ball out quick and pressure metrics. But I just any thoughts of yours in terms of some of the numbers that Bowles threw at them?
How do you stop that? How do you stop a guy where you can't sit back and play coverage or you can't bring pressure? I mean, this is the Lamar Jackson version we've been waiting to see since a long time, and it's great to see it come to fruition, especially his command, the line of scrimmage, and his ID skills right now. I mean, I don't doubt he's been watching film in the past, but it seems like he's taken his mental game to a whole new level, and the progression throughout the year has been exponential. So I'm just, every single week, I'm excited to see what this guy does at the line of scrimmage.
Now, Lamar cannot be put under the franchise tag ever again, or likely cannot be. His next contract, he can't be, because it's part of his current contract, is that he can't be franchised again. What do you think about the next quarterback who does get franchised in the same way Lamar has? Now, obviously, the Lamar situation was kind of odd that they couldn't get the deal done before the year he was actually up. And then they had to use this franchise tag, and they used the non-exclusive. So the only cost was 1 first-round draft pick. It wasn't 2.
Wow.
Even Rich Eisen, I think, was talking on the show as if it was 2 first-round draft picks is all they had to give. But no, it's 1 first-round draft pick. That was it. Well, if he'd been an exclusive, then they can sign him for 2. But with the non-exclusive, it was 1 and the right of refusal on the contract. Okay. So any other team would have effectively been setting the price for Lamar, but there's teams out there who had the cap to make it a poison pill, and the Ravens wouldn't have been able to do it. They would have had to, perhaps potentially move on from Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, which was I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I was one of those fans who was not obviously I didn't want to lose Lamar, but I don't want to lose the franchise either to just one player. So it was that situation with Lamar was very stressful, especially the contract year where he got hurt. He couldn't finish the year. I mean, I'm just glad it's all over. He's our quarterback now. And this next contract, because his $70 million cap hit is coming up around the corner. We have to make a move on an extension or something, because $76 million is unacceptable. It just can't be done.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll have to look up his contract to see if 2025 is a realistic year, or they have to make a move even before then.
I think it's realistic. I think it might be 30.
Okay. So
30 or 40.
2025, his cap number is 43.7. So that is reasonable, or it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
In 26, he's at 74.6. You're right. They'll have to make a move before then. If he plays like he is now, they're going to be highly motivated to make a move, and it's not going to be cheap. Both of those things are going to be true. So he may end up making
50, 60.
Yeah, I'd be afraid that it's going to be pushing $65 million a year that he would be making on the next deal. So it's not it'll be somewhat cheaper. It won't be a whole lot cheaper, and the franchise can't afford to lose him, obviously, but I'd be really tempted to make it a longer deal, not a shorter deal. And I hope
a 10-year deal or something.
Yeah. I mean, if they could do that, I'd be in favor of longer with more guaranteed money and take a little bit risk on it, not working out, but have a long strip or a longer window of potential competitiveness with Lamar. That would be attractive. The Chiefs have effectively done that with Mahomes.
Yes. And that's, I don't want to follow the Chief and Mahomes, but that's almost the blueprint right now. And yeah. Might as well follow suit because we got a guy.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about ample time and space, ball out quick and pressure a little bit. Because this is the other thing. And this is a Ravens offensive line did not do a good job of providing a good opportunity set for Lamar. And yet he was perfectly fine with it. So they only threw the ball 24 times. That's not correct. They threw the ball 22 times. They had two sacks. So 24 plays resulted in a passer sack. Five ATS opportunities, only 21%. People who listen to the show regularly know normal range, 26 to 29% is about what I would expect to be average. So they're below average on that. 11 ball out quicks, 46%. That was where the Ravens really made some hay. They were pressured eight times, 33%. That's actually not too high, but you want a better relationship between your pressure and ATS than 8-5 against. You'd like that to be
opposite of anything.
Opposite would be terrific. Even would be good too. Mm. So I wouldn't need to have the ATS opportunities are pretty rare in the NFL now. They used to be a lot more common as I defined it a few years ago, but they're really not all that common anymore. There's too much focus on getting free rushers on the quarterback because completion percentages are so high.
Fair.
Look at how he did in each of those groups. He was 3 of 5 with ATS, 83 net yards, 16.6 yards per play. 8.5 is kind of like my arbitrary standard of where he ought to be. The ball out quicks, which should produce about 6 yards per play. He was 9 of 11 for 107 yards, 9.6 yards per play. The eight, I think it's actually 9.7 yards per play, just doing the math in my head here. Yeah, I think it's 9.7. And then the eight pressures were 33%. He was 5 of 6 for 74 yards, 9.3 yards per play when pressured. When pressured. My standard there is 2.5 yards per play. Yeah, sorry, 3.5 yards per play. So there were two sacks in there, and he still found a way to get 9.3 yards per play. He did not run the Ravens out of a single pressure. So he didn't scramble for what that means. He didn't scramble for positive yardage. He ran them out of a bunch of pressures where he
right. I was going to say
the pressures were recorded and charged to a lineman, but he still made a big pass play.
Fair.
So, but he outperformed his opportunity set. And this is really where we're in the land of the bizarre at this point. By 127 yards. Now, we've had that happen in recent times. Lamar outperformed his opportunity set last week by, I think, 140, and Burrow outperformed his opportunity set against the Ravens by 140. It was in a hell of a lot more passes. Lamar, 127 yards better on 24 throws, is 5.3 additional yards above expected for his opportunity set per pass.
You can't handle that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's like Henry getting 7 yards before contact or something.
And that shows you the marginal effect of what Lamar does on the game. I mean, it's evident why this guy's the best. He's going to be 3-time MVP this year. I mean,
I told you this was going to be a happy conversation, didn't I?
Yeah, it's great. It's amazing.
We're going through this. I mean, we're talking about the defense and we're moaning about the number of defensive linemen they have and the lack of pressure they're getting. And, do they need a pass rusher? Or do they really need a safety to fix that part of what's not working? God. It's just there's so much negativity on the defensive pod, even with the win. And, it would be like walking through hell. If it had been a loss, it's walking outside on a rainy day
the offense has been covering up the defense the past couple of weeks for sure. It's been, I can only imagine if we lost some of these games, the defensive pods would be very rough.
Even the one that was on the knife's edge was that Cincinnati game because at a 41-38 win, it's like, everything's happy. What are we concerned about? Maybe we just beat Cincinnati on the road. But if they lose that game after all the opportunities they had to that would have been a nightmare. All right. Some next gen stats, 2.83 time to throw was 11th longest. So it didn't have a ton of time to throw this week relative to some he's had in the past. He usually is right up in the upper stratosphere of quarterbacks in terms of extending plays. He didn't really have that one play that he extended for 6 seconds in this game. So that was part of the reason why he's a little lower. He's 3.8% above expected completion percentage. ADOT of 8.6 was eighth. That was eighth longest. But here's the good combination of these. His ADOT was the eighth longest, but his completed air yards was 8.4 relative to an ADOT of 8.6. The completed air yards was the second best. Now, if you're thinking through this and you've never really heard of completing air yards, intended air yards, ADOT, all that stuff, your longer passes are less often complete. So you're going to typically have a significantly lower completed air yards than your intended air yards, because screen passes are very highly are often complete and really significantly drag down your completed air yards, and your long passes are not as often complete, so you don't get the benefit of those in your calculation. Well, this it effectively didn't matter whether Lamar was throwing deep or short. He completed everything. Yep. Completed a high percentage of everything. So that was a very sweet thing. Maybe Ricard's drop helped in that way in terms of.
That probably was it, actually.
it was pretty close. It had to be over eight and a half yards from line of scrimmage. That's probably about where he was.
But the efficiency is just ridiculous. I mean, you throw the ball 8.6 yards and you complete it just 0.2 off. I mean, yeah, you can't beat that. I mean, every time you're throwing the ball, like you mentioned, you're throwing the ball downfield, more than likely it's getting complete. So it's just, I think we've talked about Lamar to death at this point, I think.
Right. I'm not sure it's going to be too much ever for a Baltimore audience right now.
Yeah.
Incredibly, Lamar did not have the best air yard. I'm looking at the whole season. That's the problem. I'm not looking at week seven. So I look at week seven and Lamar's in air yard differential, because they do have that in next gen stats. It's actually only fourth. There were three guys who were positive numbers this week: Dalton, Trevor Lawrence, and Russell Wilson. Three guys you really want to emulate at this point in their respective careers. no skin off Lamar's back in terms of the quality of this outcome. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other scheme components. The running back snap division: 27 to Hill, 34 to Henry, 0 to Collier. Two ponies in this group. So still through seven games, 0 carries for running back 3.
Yeah, and I think until Keaton comes back, it's going to stay like that. Collier doesn't deserve carries in his offense, nor does any other running back, really. Just the Henry and Hill show at this point.
I think they might have used Collier at some point during the game had not – the game script didn't really allow for it. They had a Hill run in the line 3 straight times
second to last possession.
The Josh, it was, I think it was their last possession, the Josh Johnson possession. It was the last possession. Yeah.
So
if they'd had a 24 point lead at that point, I think they might have put Collier in the game. But Collier has cost himself carries by the fumble on the kickoff.
Yes.
The fumbling ball out of bounds. I just don't think I don't think Harbaugh completely trusts him at this point in terms of putting in the game.
I don't blame him.
Yeah. Okay. What else we got going on here? The percentage of utilization by play: Hill carried or received on 8 of 27 snaps, Henry on 16 of 34. So Henry still got that designated ball carrier status, very much like Mark Andrews used to be as a receiver. He was kind of the designated receiver when he would come in the game on third down, in particular. He had very high target share on a very high percentage of passes kind of thing. Henry certainly is a favorite to get the ball. It's kind of a nice thing, I think, to have it that way, because you really got to respect the fact that they're most of the time going to Henry when he's in the game.
Yeah. And I think the mesh point and just the threat is always going to be an issue with that. But something that we've had success with, especially since the Bills game, is just continuing to use Justice Hill on these downs. You don't expect him to be used, just the break tendency. I think when we get to that point, like we have been the past couple weeks, it's really hard because, like Dave mentioned in-house, it's a pick your poison offense. And especially in the backfield right now, we have Henry, who's the best. We got Hill, who's a good complimentary. And then we got Lamar Jackson, who's the best. So
it's a great combination. And I just really hope that they're going to get more high value usage out of Flowers when they get Keaton Mitchell back. Cause I think basically anything you're currently running with Flowers in terms of jet motion, or even in terms of really the wide receiver screen game, you can run with Mitchell. Doesn't mean you have to run everyone to Mitchell, but you can do it with Mitchell. And that should take some workload off, frankly, both players, both Flowers and Henry in terms of touches.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing with me about Flowers' usage is like, he has a game like we do against the Commanders. I know this game, he didn't have that much of an impact, which is fine because everyone else stepped up and had an impact. But the continuous using him in jet motion, I just, we have other options that can run that. I just don't know why we continue to put him in that role. I mean,
nails on a chalkboard.
I just don't know. I just don't know right now. Monken's better than this, I would think. I don't know what it is.
They found a way in the second half of last year to use Flowers a lot more on deeper routes down the field. And some of that was Keaton Mitchell being available. Mm-hmm. So I can't deconstruct it entirely, but you know, Keaton Mitchell effectively joined the team for purposes of actually touching the football around what, week 7 or 8? I think the Lions game, he got 2 touches as a receiver, and then the Seattle game, he started getting touches, and immediately, you know, we were excited by the weapon we'd found. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I don't know.
All right. In terms of the heavies, I mentioned it's 1.85 heavies per play. Andrews, 54%, likely 59%. Ricard, 36%, and Kolar, 36%. It kind of shows you two things with this. First of all, they're not going all out to be heavy, not in the same way. Even in a game like this, where they pretty much could have done whatever they want, they weren't going all out to be heavy at all. The other thing is that when Andrews and Likely combined are only playing 113% of snaps, the overlap they can have is relatively limited because they almost always have one of those two guys in the game. Not 100%, but very close. The only time they wouldn't would be in some sort of short yardage position where they just didn't feel like they wanted either of their receivers in their blocking. But honestly, even then, they probably would have one in there. So basically, there's only a 13%
unless it's overlap. Using the Kohler Express. That's probably when they take them out.
Kohler under center?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean they have that, but even then they need big bodies, so they'd have another heavy in Cleveland. They need other big bodies on the field. I think effectively the overlap is 13%, which is so far from what I think people had hoped for in terms of how much those guys would be on the field together. It just continues to amaze me that I can't say it's been bad for the offense to keep these two guys fresh and you know, kind of separate their snaps. It's just, it's not as much play from either of them that I bet neither of them is entirely happy with the amount of playing time they're getting. Yeah, they're thrilled that the team is winning. They're thrilled that they're contributing to it both in a meaningful way. But are there either of them actually happy with the amount of playing time?
I think Andrews is a guy that's not going to worry about that because he's already on a second contract. He's paid. A guy like Likely is someone who's going to be very annoyed by that because he has something to prove. He's still looking to get that second contract in the league, I think. And then he had the big game to start of the year, and he's really taken a back seat in these past couple of weeks. I mean, he's made his plays here and there, but in the sense of being a focal point of this offense, he's not been that. So I wouldn't blame Likely for being a little bit upset, but when you're winning, I don't think there's too much to be mad about.
I completely agree. I think that's an outstanding point there. Is, you know, there are some players who are very sensitive to where they're playing and how much they're playing. And the other guy who is the where they're playing issue is Brandon Stevens. He really wants to stay at cornerback. And there's discussion that, hey, maybe he'd help the team more at safety. Maybe it's Wiggins and Humphrey outside and Ardarius Washington in the slot or Mollett in the slot or whoever it might be that would give him the best chance to improve the defense. And you'd take Eddie Jackson off the field and put Stevens at safety. Excuse me. I'm not sure that it's wrong, but I understand why a player would be very sensitive about getting moved to safety in the middle of a contract year.
Fair. Yeah. And then on top of that, he hasn't proven to have the best ball skills, and we're looking for a ball hog back there. So I don't know how much pairing that'd be.
Yeah, he's at least played that position before. I know he's converted running back, converted safety, converted everything pretty much at this point. But he would be in a different spot to be starting by looking at the football or looking at the quarterback. So I think it would have a chance to work. But anyway, I'm not for it or anything. I pretty much want him to figure it out from where he is right now. There's one thing more I wanted to mention, and this is the use of set and chip blockers in this game. They used 11 set blockers and 6 chip blockers on 24 passing snaps. Now, that's 0.67 per play, which is about average or a little bit above average, tiny bit above average. But they did that in a game where the Bucs rushed 5+ on 67% of snaps. That's an incredibly high blitz rate. Okay, a blitz rate by the traditional statement of blitz, which is 5+ instead of the off-ball blitzes. That's remarkable to be able to take care with it. I mean, they basically had one set or chip block for every additional rusher above 4, which is remarkable. So they had 5 block 4 and one additional kind of thing. It wasn't a one-for-one matchup or anything. I'm not saying that, but that's a remarkably conservative usage of your receiving assets to pass block.
Yeah, and I think that definitely is a reflection of Lamar and his protection understanding of the scheme and being able to call it out and get people in the right position. So it's just the trickle effect of that for sure.
Frazier, always a pleasure talking football with you. This is a great episode. I really, really enjoyed this discussion with you. Tell folks where they can, first of all, talk football with you online or reach you if they want to.
You guys can reach me at Twitter/X at F_Rave8. That's F_RAVE8.
Definitely somebody you want to try and get a follow on and include him and tag him into your conversations from time to time. That's okay, right?
No problem.
Okay, because a guy will have something to contribute to the conversation, and you can tell that from listening to this episode, I'm sure. Other folks out there want to talk through one time what the normal schedule of film study output is during the week. So we have a double episode on the defense that comes out the day after the game, a double episode on the offense that comes out, sorry, make that 2 days after for the defense, 3 days after for the offense. Then we have a Know Your Foe episode that comes out the following day, usually with one last thing that same day. Then Friday morning GM comes out the day after that. And then two matchups episodes, which Frazier does with me, one on the offense, one on the defense, that are separate. Those usually come out on Saturday and on Sunday before a game, sometimes both on Saturday. But whenever they come out, they're worth listening to. They're usually very short, the shortest material that we produce on any of the shows. And I really do appreciate the format for this that we've kind of arrived at, Frazier. Appreciate your participation in that, because it's been good discussion. Frazier, thanks again for coming on.
Yep, thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.